Go. All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 578 for Thursday, September the 19th, 1982. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and remember, the only thing standing between you and your dreams is your appearance, lack of talent, and general personality. that joke would have been better if I had anybody else on the show to, you know, point it at. But anyways, tonight, I have nobody. It's just me. I have no jokes to tell. I have been working on rebuilding my own personal NAS, and if you're going to set up a true NAS, make sure you have some SSDs to put the system stuff on, because otherwise you're going to hear those hard drives going constantly. But that's okay. That's okay. Now, Hazard says, Pure Decking might be the only thing I listen to in full and makes me want to not run into the woods yet. Oh, I'm doing it wrong. No, you should be living the hermit lifestyle, staying away from technology, and following the gospel of Professor Ted. don't actually do that. Don't actually do that. I should not be encouraging people to live like the Unabomber. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into this. First article I have up and I wanted to talk about a little bit is from The Verge, but it's been covered in several other places. Nintendo and Pokemon are suing PalWorld maker Pocket Pair. Again, I think they've already sued them once. Nintendo and the Pokemon Company have filed a patent infringement lawsuit against Pocket Pair, which makes the game PalWorld. From Nintendo's press release, Nintendo Company Limited, Kyoto Minami Q Japan representative, director, and president Shunetaro Furukawa. I got that name wrong. Together with the Pokemon Company, filed a patent infringement lawsuit in the Tokyo District Court against Pocket Pair Inc. They've got the full thing for that, so you know, I don't need to read all of that. The lawsuit seeks injunction against infringement and compensation for damages on the grounds that PalWorld, a game developed and released by the defendant, infringes multiple patent rights. Patent rights. If they were going to file a copyright lawsuit, I could see it, especially because most of the monsters in PalWorld look like the ChatGPT generated versions of Make a Pokemon for me. So I get that. But patent infringement. In response, Pocket Pair issued a statement saying it was unaware of any patents it had violated. It was not notified of such details. Nevertheless, it would begrudgingly begin investigating the claims. Quote, it is truly unfortunate that we will be forced to allocate significant time to matters unrelated to game development due to this lawsuit. However, we will do our utmost for our fans and to ensure that indie game developers are not hindered or discouraged from pursuing their creative ideas. Unquote. PalWorld, which is still in early access, became one of the first big gaming hits of 2024 when it launched in January, selling more than 5 million copies in 3 days. The survival crafting game has been described as Pokemon with guns. It has your character working with monsters or pals, but some of PalWorld's monsters' designs are remarkably similar to Pokemon, and people almost immediately called out PalWorld for the apparent ripoffs. But that's the thing, is it's like, yeah, that's a copyright issue. I don't understand the patent infringement. That's the part that's throwing me here. Because if Nintendo is claiming patent infringement, that means they think they have a patent on some aspect of this gameplay. I guess of the concept of capturing monsters and making them fight each other. If that's the case, I believe cockfighting counts as prior art, but it's really odd to me that they're doing as a patent infringement, because that just seems like the wrong law. Or Nintendo knows they don't actually have a case to stand on. And so they're just going to throw legal noise at this company until they run them out of money and shut them down, which is kind of what I suspect is going on here. And again, it's really unfortunate. I've played Power World. I got bored with Power World, but apparently they're going to do some updates to it. So yay. But, I mean, it's an interesting little game, but it's at the same time, you know, you kind of get bored of it. At least I did fairly quickly. I know some people just will live in a game like that and, you know, fine, good for them, enjoy what you like. But I never really got into Pokemon much either, so despite being in the right age to have played the original. But, yeah, no, I just, I don't know, I played it once. I'm like, this is a cheap Final Fantasy ripoff. I'll just go back and play Final Fantasy, thanks. And that's all I ever cared about. But yeah, I don't understand the patent infringement. That's the part that bothers me. Now, maybe that's a legal difference with Japan. I was discussing with some of the guys before we started the show, and they thought, well, maybe that's a Japanese thing. Maybe. I guess that's possible, but I don't understand that, because in my mind, a patent is for something mechanical, something novel, you know, some unique technology, whereas what Power World is doing would be like, you know, copyright. Because, and again, yeah, some of the characters in Power World do look like they're pretty much straight out of Pokemon. They're certainly in the same art style, so it's like, fine, but how is this a patent infringement case? So depending on the outcome of this could be a real problem, because I don't like the idea that game makers can patent certain aspects of gameplay. That's what I'm concerned about, is that they're going to claim a patent over some game mechanic. And again, it's in Japan. I know their rules are different than the United States. I know in the United States, it's there's some rules about on patents, about things actually having to be novel. They can't just be basic applications of mechanics or, you know, purely functional device. You know, it has to be, I'm thinking of copyright. Copyright, you can't copyright a purely mechanical or purely functional thing. It has to have some kind of an artistic thing on it. But if you can patent a game mechanic, I mean, that's going to become a problem really quick. Because, I mean, if id Software could patent the first-person shooter back, well, it would have expired by now. But, you know, think of how many games would never have come out if that... Yeah, Cycross, that's what I'm worried about. Arguably, game mechanics could fall under patent if algorithms can be patented. That's exactly what I'm worried about. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens with this one, but I mean, I'll be honest, if Nintendo sued Power World out of existence under copyright, I probably wouldn't care. It's like, yeah, I could see it. But, you know, the patent thing scares me, because it makes me think that certain game companies are going to own certain game mechanics, and that's just going to be, it's going to be a problem. So. Oops, son of a... Close the frickin' IRC. And there's something going on. Tons of websites are down tonight. Up and down. I know the G15 main page isn't loading correctly because of the IRC window. So that's, I don't know quite what's going on. I'm sure we'll see something about some major Amazon outage. But, yeah, I got back in. Okay. Close the wrong tab. My fault. I'm an idiot. Okay, we're done with that story. I've got nothing else to say about it other than just repeating the I don't understand it. Yeah, IRSSI, I used to use that through a jump host, and the whole system was retired, so I haven't built something up yet. I'm going to, though. I've got, like I said, I was working on my NAS. That's about done. The hardware from my old NAS, which isn't that different from my new NAS, really, is probably going to get turned into a Proxmox server. So I'll be having my Linux VMs again here after a bit. But yeah, I've had to spin a lot of the old hardware down because I lost some hardware a while back and didn't see the need to rebuild all of it. Yeah, Hexchat's good too. Next article. is from Ars Technica. 1.3 million Android-based TV boxes have been backdoored, and researchers don't know how. Researchers still don't know the cause of a recently discovered malware infection infecting almost 1.3 million streaming devices running an open-source version of Android in almost 200 countries. Security firm WebDoctor reported Thursday that malware named Android.VO1D, Android Void, has backdoored the Android-based boxes by putting malicious components in their system storage area, where they can be updated with additional malware at any time by command and control servers. Google representatives said the infected devices are running operating systems based on the Android open source project, a version overseen by Google, but distinct from Android TV, a proprietary version restricted to licensed device makers. Although Dr. Webb has a thorough understanding of Void, and the exceptional reaches achieved, the company researchers say they have yet to determine the attack vector that has led to the infections. You can run IRSSI and Sigwin. Oh, man, I haven't bothered with a Sigwin install in years. Data center with a pager and a walkie-talkie. Oh, that's mean. Not as mean as the meme image. I'm not going to read it on air, but I'll throw the image in the chat here in just a minute. I got to pull it up. But yeah, it had me giggling because it's like, that's good alliteration. That's a mean joke, but it's good alliteration. So we'll throw that in there. Anyways, back to the article. Although Dr. Webb has a thorough understanding of Void and the exceptional reaches achieved, company researchers said they have yet to determine the attack vector that's led to the infections. Quote, at the moment, the source of the TV box's backdoor infection remains unknown, unquote. Thursday's Post stated, quote, one possible infection vector could be an attack by an intermediate malware that exploits the operating system vulnerabilities to gain root. Another possible vector could be the use of unofficial firmware versions with built-in root access. Ding, 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 we have a winner. These are all, you know, knockoff Android boxes, you know, the $30, $40 jobbies on, you know, eBay and Amazon and things like that. I suspect these things are rooted from factory. They're just coming in with a backdoor already built into them. One possible cause of the infection is that the device is running outdated versions that are vulnerable to exploits that remotely execute malicious code on them. Versions 7.1, 10.1, and 12.1, for example, were released in 2016, 19, and 2022, respectively. What's more, Dr. Webb said it's not unusual for budget device manufacturers to install older OS versions in streaming boxes and make them appear more attractive by passing them off as more up-to-date models. Anyways, further, while only licensed device makers are permitted to modify Google's Android TV, any device maker is free to make changes to the open source versions. That leaves open the possibility that the devices were infected in the supply chain and were already compromised by the time they were purchased by the end user. We have a winner. That's it. Of course, these things are rooted out of the box. Yeah. Like, you know, it's horrible, but you know, again, the alliteration's kind of funny. Quote, these off-brand devices discovered to be infected were not Play Protect certified Android devices, unquote, Google said in a statement. Quote, if a device isn't Play Protect certified, Google doesn't have a record of security and compatibility test results. Play Protect, yeah. Google's just saying, buy the real ones, don't buy the cheap ones. The statement said people can confirm a device runs Android TV OS by checking. They got a link and some steps to follow, which are going to show you how to go look up your version of Android. Dr. Webb said there are dozens of Void variants that use different code and plant malware in slightly different storage areas, but all achieve the same end result of connecting to an attacker-controlled server and installing a final component that can install additional malware when instructed. VirusTotal showed that most of Void's variants were first uploaded to the malware identification site several months ago, and they've got a nice breakdown in the article of the malware showing, you know, the actual scripts that are executed. You know, where they were finding files in the system, things like that. So it's interesting to look at, especially if you're up with how this kind of stuff works. But yeah, what these are the, you know, the $30 Android devices that you see on Amazon or eBay or whatever that say, oh, watch whatever TV you want. And they, you know, usually come with, you know, whatever third-party app to access, you know, whatever streaming site on top of them. But, tossed because of Disney. Pretty sure we already talked about that one, Alhazard, a long time ago. Once the NYU doctor allergy death suit tossed because of the Witters. Yeah, no, we talked about that one. We talked about that one already. Just be aware when you buy a cheap Android device or anything from China, really, it's probably, you know, got backdoors on it, malware on it, because there's a reason it's cheap. And it's not only is there a reason it's cheap, but, you know, it's going to be pirated software that's on there. For a while, there were several websites that would sell, like, you know, AliExpress and things like that. They would sell these super cheap Windows computers. And if you went in and looked at it, the version of Windows, the license on it was going to be some corporate, you know, license with a script on it to auto activate it without reaching out to Microsoft. Basically, it's all pirated all to hell. And again, most likely malware pre-installed in it. You know, this is not a new thing. It's just an easy way to build a botnet is just to, you know, get some crap in the firmware image that the companies are selling. And it might be the people who work for that Android box, or it might just be somebody who works for that company who's like, oh yeah, here's an image, use this. You know, I mean, it's just, you never know. Anyways, that's it. If you do want to take advantage of the cheap hardware, make sure you know how to wipe it and put your own images on it. You know, those cheap Windows machines that came with the messed up, you know, Windows installs, they're great if you're intended to wipe it off and put a Linux install on there. Just saying. Next article up is from 404media.co. Snapchat reserves the right to use AI-generated images of your face in ads. What the hell? Okay, this article loaded earlier. Now it doesn't. Now it says sign up for free to access this post. Fuck off. Never mind. Ditch that story. Basically, it loaded earlier, but now it's got a thing. So I can't read it now. So skip it. Screw it. I'm not talking about it. Well, I'm not going to talk about it from them. The gist of it was that, you know, Snapchat, like everybody else, has bullshit in their terms of service, which say they have the right to do whatever the hell they want with anything you upload to Snapchat. But with Snapchat, it's your photos. So they're saying, well, we can use your photos in ads. If you don't consent, no, they don't care. They don't care at all. Yeah, they'll still do it. Because they're not—they don't have a person looking at it. They're just pulling crap out and saying, "Oh, that's a good picture. That's, yeah, use that, use that, use that." And they don't care, because they have that, you know, non-expiring, irrevocable, you know, free use license that everyone has in their terms of service, saying, "Oh, well, you sent it to our service, so we're allowed to do whatever the hell we want with it." So, yeah, but there's nothing more to that one. The point I was going to make about that article was simply that every single cloud service has that crap in there. Every single one. You know, Snapchat saying that they can use your photos in ads. Yeah, well, the only reason Facebook hasn't done that is because they thought they'd upset too many people. So there's, you know, or any other website that, you know, you upload stuff to. Go read the fine print for all of them. They have the right to do whatever the hell they want with whatever you're uploading. And that's primarily because the main language they come up with for this, and they'll rightly say that, no, this is so we can host it on our servers. But you're giving them a lot more than just the right to do that with it. You're basically giving them effective ownership of it. Like, they don't hold copyright over it, but they can do whatever they want with it. So... anyways, Let's go to the next article. This is from Ars Technica. AT&T fined $13 million for data breach after giving customer bill info to a vendor. I like this because it shows that, you know, they're going to start holding companies responsible for obvious data breaches. It gets a little weird when you get into companies that have been hacked, but when you have a company that's just straight up irresponsible with data, they should be punished for it. So, anyways, AT&T agreed to pay and of course, $13 million to AT&T is nothing. No, it's not responsible that they're doing it and just paying the fine. It's more showing that, you know, hey, there's a cost associated with this. You're going to have to pay a cost to it. Unfortunately, you're right in that cost is probably way too low. And, you know, that cost is probably cheaper than just doing it correctly. But at least they're starting. Or, like you said, maybe it'll set the precedent that you just pay the fine and not fix it, right? I don't know. AT&T agreed to pay a $13 million fine because it gave customer bill information to a vendor in order to create personalized videos, then allegedly failed to ensure that the vendor destroyed the data when it was no longer needed. In addition to the fine, AT&T agreed to a consent decree announced today by the Federal Communications Commission to stricter controls on data sharing with vendors. In January of 2023, years after the data was supposed to be destroyed, the vendor suffered a breach when threat actors accessed the vendor's cloud environment and ultimately exfiltrated AT&T customer information, unquote, the FCC said. Information related to 8.9 million AT&T wireless customers was exposed. So yeah, like $1.30. Oh yeah, no. Again, this is not hurting their bottom line. And by the way, you don't want it to, because if the FCC came in and said, "Oh, okay, well, we're going to take 25% of whatever your revenue was," you know what AT&T is going to do is they're just going to bump everybody's bill up by 45% or whatever the hell. So, yes, Cycros, that's exactly the point I wanted to make. Being hacked and losing data isn't criminal, but if you're not being responsible with it, that is something you should be held liable for. Especially in this case where the data wasn't even supposed to exist anymore. But anyways. AT&T used the vendor to generate and host personalized video content, including billing and marketing videos for AT&T customers. Under AT&T's contracts, the vendor should have destroyed or returned the AT&T customer information was no longer necessary to fulfill contractual obligations, which ended years before the breach occurred. AT&T failed to ensure that the vendor, one, adequately protected the customer information, and two, returned or destroyed it as required by the contract. The data, quote, remained with the vendor's cloud environment for many years after it should have been deleted or returned to AT&T and was ultimately exposed, unquote, in the January of 2023 breach, an FCC Enforcement Bureau order said. AT&T told the FCC that it shared customer data with the vendor between 2015 and 2017 and that the data was supposed to be securely destroyed or deleted by 2018. The exposed data included line count for all impacted customers and bill balance and pay information and rate plan name and features for approximately 1% of impacted customers, unquote, the FCC said. AT&T told Ars Today that the data, quote, did not contain credit card information, social security numbers, account passwords, or other sensitive personal information, unquote. AT&T said it notified customers of the breach in March of 2023. Quote, AT&T stated that it monitored impacted customer accounts following the incident, and identified no evidence of AT&T account-related fraud or other unlawful or unauthorized activity tied to the breach, unquote. How do you know? Anyways, the consent decree said, quote, according to AT&T, porting, SIM swap, and equipment fraud rates for impacted customers following the incident were consistently less than the rates for the general population of AT&T mobility customers across all account types, unquote. Never mind. I'm not going to pick that apart. That's a marketing statement. That's AT&T trying to manage the message, saying the people who were impacted were less than the rates of the general population. They're trying to say that, oh, no, it didn't cause anything. Given the size of AT&T's customer base and how many times these things happen and they don't know about it. Anyways, when contacted by Ars, AT&T did not respond directly to the FCC's allegations that it failed to ensure the vendor protected customer information. AT&T provided a statement saying, quote, "A vendor we previously used experienced a security incident last year that exposed data pertaining to some of our wireless customers. Though our systems were not compromised in the incident, we're making enhancements to how we manage customer information internally, as well as implementing new requirements on our vendors' data management practices," unquote. The public version of the consent decree identified AT&T's contractor only as Vendor X. Okay, that's actually kind of a badass marketing name. Like, I would want a marketing company called Vendor X. That just very 90s, you know what I mean? What was the old arcade game? Oh God. It was like Generation X or something like that. Anyways, there was another company that Vendor X have contracted with, identified as Supplier One. AT&T told the FCC that it, quote, performed multiple reviews and assessments of Vendor X and Supplier One between 2016 and 2020, unquote. AT&T also told the FCC that the vendor and supplier, quote, both stated that they were destroying data in accordance with their respective agreements, unquote, according to the document. The FCC, unsatisfied with AT&T's efforts to ensure the deletion of data, said the consent decree required new, quote, data governance practices to ensure appropriate processes and procedures are incorporated into AT&T's business practices to protect customer-sensitive data against similar vendor data breaches in the future, unquote. The requirements will be in place for 3 years. AT&T must improve security by, quote, engaging in due diligence when selecting vendors, requiring vendors to employ safeguards for customer information, limiting vendor access to and storage of customer information, and conducting enhanced vendor oversight, unquote, the consent decree said. AT&T must create a data inventory program to, quote, track AT&T data or customers' data shared with vendors, unquote. I don't know of a single company that's ever successfully made a data inventory program actually work. Oh, they've made them to show the regulators, don't get me wrong, but I believe the term is cooking the books. Because most of the time these companies don't know where their data is. They don't even know what their data is. And I guarantee these vendors probably thought they had deleted that data and just didn't know it was sitting out there in an S3 bucket. Oh right, a cloud system. I forgot they're not naming what things are. But let's be fucking real. We all know it was an S3 bucket. AT&T must also quote require. I'm sure what's happened is they had a dev environment. A developer copied the crap in there so they had it to work with, and they didn't know about it because you know that developer probably quit like a year later. Didn't document it, didn't have any tickets, nobody flipping knew. And it's just sitting out there because these companies half the time don't know what they have. They don't know what they're using. They don't know what people are putting where. And anybody who's ever done storage management for a company of any size will tell you nobody knows the whole picture. They don't have the tooling to monitor it. It's too expensive, so nobody will pay for the right, you know, reporting and monitoring to actually see what they're using. And, you know, Microsoft has had controls in their Office products for like a decade now for data management, tagging, and expiration, and nobody uses it because everyone is terrified of the first time that that automatic data, you know, retention policy runs and they lose something important. You know, I've had executives go in and tell me, demand that I turn the email filtering for their accounts off. They said they would rather get all the junk and the spam than dare miss some of their email messages. And they were serious. I saw their mail logs. I'm like, are you really? And they're like, yep, that's what they wanted. So they don't know where it is. They don't know what they have. Most vendors don't. Because you have to think, Vendor X, that, you know, sure, their contract with AT&T, it's probably a company of less than 100 people, in all seriousness. It's probably, you know, it's a marketing company. They've probably got 20 to 30 people who do actual work, and everybody else in there is sales for the most part. So maybe I'm being mean. I'm sure they have an HR department. Yeah, they don't. They just don't know. So I'm sure that vendor thought they deleted it too until they got popped. Yeah, AT&T must also require vendors to adhere to retention disposal obligations related to customer information, to limit the quantity of customer information vulnerable to breach, and conduct annual compliance audits to evaluate AT&T's compliance with the consent decree, including information security and vendor information security requirements. The FCC said complying with the consent decree would require significant investments in safeguarding data shared with third-party vendors. Quote, given AT&T's size, number of customers, and extensive use of vendors, this will likely require expenditures far greater than the civil penalty herein, unquote, the FCC said. Quote, the commission will hold AT&T accountable for making these mandatory changes to its data protection practices as required to comply with this consent decree, the Communications Act, and the commission's rules going forward, unquote. AT&T can easily afford the fine. This is the part you guys were mentioning in the IRC. AT&T can easily afford the fine. The company reported $2.9 billion in revenue and $3.5 billion in net income in Q2 of 2024. That's just in one quarter. Yeah, they can afford it. The breach described in the consent decree is not the most recent or biggest leak of AT&T customer data involving a third-party vendor. AT&T confirmed in July of 2024 that call and text records for nearly all of AT&T cellular customers were exposed in the hack of AI data cloud provider Snowflake, which means AT&T sold nearly all of its call and text records to Snowflake for AI data training. After that breach, U.S. senators questioned why AT&T was storing massive amounts of call and text message records on a third-party analytics program or platform. So it's because they sold it to them for making products and most likely training an AI model. Okay, so all companies of any significant size are doing this now. They are collecting data. They're keeping it. Hard drives are cheaper than data. So they're just buying up storage, cloud storage, whatever. And they're going to sell it to these companies that use it for analytics, for marketing, for AI data training. You just have to know that. Now, this is where you come back and say, do you care? Because most of the time, your data is not really tied to you. Not that you can't trace it back and figure it out. I mean, they've done that for years where they'll grab somebody's search engine history and figure out who it is with like a 90% accuracy or something like that. They did with the Yahoo back in the day. So it's not that you couldn't do the work. It's just that they won't bother to do the work because they have the whole phone book to work with, right? Well, they have every phone book across the world to work with. So your data is going to, what you have is going to get dumped in with everything else and plugged into these platforms. The problem is that while companies are only going to do what's profitable with it, which usually doesn't involve going back and figuring out who an individual was, they want to create groups of users that they can then turn around and market things to. So oh, this person leans this way politically. This person has this hobby. This person collects this esoteric thing. We can show ads for esoteric thing, this political view, whatever, to these groups. But, or they can train their AI data model. Now, with the AI models, you do kind of have to worry about the AI model accidentally spitting out the exact text of whatever you fed it. They've caught some copyright issues with that, and I know lawsuits have been going around and around. And the other thing to keep in mind is most tech companies are not Microsoft and Google. They're financed through various kinds of investment capital. These guys want a return on their investment. So, even if the company is staffed with angels, the investors will come in and fire the angels and put in people who actually would get their money back in whatever their time frame they've set is. So, companies aren't evil, but they are amoral. And you have to know that going in. So, I guess my point is that you need to decide how much of that you care about. Do you throw your phone away and go live in the woods as a hermit? You could. That's what RU does, effectively. You could only run, you know, operating systems that you can confirm are 100% secure, or do everything through your 13 proxies or whatever the old 4chan joke was, and, you know, only use the internet in such a standoffish way, and, you know, only using the old protocol, so IRC, BBSs, things like that, and never using anything modern. Or you could just try to manage it. I don't use social networks that much. I use some. I use some services. I've picked a side. I use iPhone stuff mainly because Apple seems slightly better than Google about that. Is Apple doing it too? Of course they are. Do I just need to make sure I'm aware of that with anything I do with any of these devices? Yeah. Do I use Apple everything? Nope. I mix things up. I've got my Linux servers. I've got my Windows laptop. I've got my iPhone and iPad. I've got a Mac Mini around here somewhere too. Don't really do that much with it. Point being, if you know what you're dealing with, you can make an appropriate assessment as to what you want to deal with. And you don't have to be terrified of it, but maybe you don't need to feed it everything about your life and hope that the company does well. The easiest example of this, and the one I always love to point out, is Radio Shack. Back in the day, every time you bought something at Radio Shack, they would harangue you for your address and phone number. And they were building a marketing list, but they said, oh, we'll never sell it. They promised they would never sell that list. Yeah, when Radio Shack went into bankruptcy, what do you think they did? They sold that list. That list was one of the first things they sold trying to get out of bankruptcy. So, again, you just have to know they're not evil, but they are immoral. And at the end of the day, they're going to try to get, you know, return on investment and keep making money. And they may do that in the short term at the cost of, you know, burning the corporation in the long run. Investment capital doesn't care. It's one of the downsides of the corporatist economic structure we've grown, I think would be the right word. So I'm not opposed to corporations, but I do think that there's a lot of room for improvement. I do think the idea of the limited liability corporation, which I don't like the idea at the end of the day with a limited liability corporation that nobody is responsible for what the corporation does, like as a person. If you have a single owner of a company, companies still get big. Companies can still do a lot of big things. But you actually have a throat to choke at the end of the day if the company screws up. With these limited liability corporations, nobody's ultimately responsible for it. And then you get into weirdness when it comes to things that are, you know, like things that are, you know, where the ownership is in stock and you have these corporate boards and it's like, well, who do you hold the stock owners responsible? Maybe you should. Maybe we should. It would certainly make people a lot more responsible about what stock they're going to hold. Anyways, just food for thought. I'm not advocating anything. I just, it's just kind of fun to play with some of these ideas of, if we tweaked the system a little bit. Don't get me wrong. I'm capitalist. Freaking mercenary. When it comes to the end of the day. But we could probably tweak the system on the edges to make things a little bit more responsible. And again, mainly just by, you know, actually having owners of companies, people who could be held responsible so that, you know, somebody might, you know, want to make sure that company is acting a little bit more responsibility than some of these do. Speaking of irresponsible companies, let's go to this next article. It's from Reuters. Disney is going to stop using Salesforce-owned Slack after the hack exposed company data, according to the Wall Street Journal. Walt Disney plans to transition away from its use of Slack as a company-wide workplace collaboration system after a hacking entity leaked online more than a terabyte of company data, Wall Street Journal reported on Thursday, citing a memo. I love it. Instead of fixing the problem, we're just going to run away from that one and go pick a new system, which I guess is a valid tactic. I mean, it's not that you can't secure Slack. It's just they're not going to bother to figure it out. Want to bet it's going to be Teams? Want to bet it's just they're going to switch over to start using Teams because it comes with Office anyways? With Slack, you can put files in it. In fact, a lot of companies with Slack, they would send source code around. I wouldn't be surprised if they were trading, you know, in the back end, it's uploading it to S3. But I wouldn't be surprised if there were like clips of things they were editing and working on and concept sketches and stuff like that getting traded on their Slack channels. Disney CFO Hugh Johnston said most of the media and entertainment company's business would stop using the service later this year. The report said many teams have already started transitioning to streamlined enterprise-wide collaboration tools, according to the report. Disney and Salesforce's Slack did not immediately respond to Reuters' request for comment. Hacking group Null Bulge, that's a name. I think I laughed at that name when we talked about them getting into Disney the first time, have published the data from thousands of Slack channels at the entertainment giant, including computer code and details about unreleased projects, the journal reported in July. The data spans more than 44 million messages from Disney's Slack workplace communications tool, Wall Street Journal reported earlier this month. Company said in August it was investigating an unauthorized release of over a terabyte of data from one of its communication systems. Null Bulge compromised software supply chains by exploiting code on GitHub and Hugging Face, collaborative coding platforms, and tricks users into downloading malicious files per SentinelOne's threat intelligence and malware analysis team. So, yeah, especially with the attached files. So that's the big thing. Like a lot of companies I've seen using Slack, their development teams will use it and they'll be passing source code back and forth on the thing. Archives, zip files. I mean, God, anything could be in there. So, yeah. So it's just amusing to me that instead of figuring out how they got hacked and maybe improving their, because again, it's supply chain attacks. They got people to install bad plugins or Hugging Face code to, you know, get their backdoors in. Instead of dealing with that, they're just like, okay, we're just not going to use Slack anymore. It's like, but it wasn't a Slack problem. It was your end users installing shit they shouldn't problem. Anyways, last story I have for tonight, as a story, anyways, I got a dojo after this, but the last story I have for tonight is from Ars Technica. Unity is dropping its unpopular per-install runtime fee. Gee, I wonder why. It's like, wait a right. You want to run everyone off of your game engine? Here's an example of what not to do. Unity, maker of a popular cross-platform engine and toolkit, will not pursue a broadly unpopular runtime fee that would have charged developers based on game installs rather than per-seat licenses. The move comes exactly 1 year after the fee's initial announcement, and they murdered their own business. I haven't seen anything from Unity in a while. I mean, yeah, people are still releasing games with it. I imagine that's because that stuff was in development when these announcements were made. But I haven't seen anything with Unity since this. I imagine everybody who hadn't had their projects significantly along in Unity ran the hell away from it. In a blog post attributed to President and CEO Matt Bromberg, the CEO writes that the company cannot continue, quote, democratizing game development without a partnership built on trust. Bromberg states that customers understand the necessity of price increases, but not in a novel and controversial new form. So game developers will not be charged per installation, but they will be sorted into personal pro and enterprise tiers by level of revenue or funding, you know, what they were doing before. How is that? It's not democratizing game development to do it per install. That's just, yeah, Alhazard, I agree with you. I mean, I understand corporate speak, and I can tell you it's just some marketing douchebag with ChatGPT putting this shit together. But man, it's like, you know, piss on my face and tell me it's raining, right? I mean, come on. Not even bothering to just go around to the back. They're just right in your face. Quote, canceling the runtime fee for games and instituting these pricing changes will allow us to continue investing in game development for everyone who wants to while also being better partners, Bromberg writes. Yeah, bullshit. It's they see their company dying and they're like, well, we better reverse tracks on that. Unity's announcement of a new runtime fee based on game installs in mid-September of 2023, while joined by cloud storage and AI at runtime, would have been costly for smaller developers who found success. The runtime fee would have cost 20 cents per install on the otherwise free personal tier after a game had reached $200,000 in revenue and more than 200,000 installs. We did some math when this was first announced, and we pretty much figured out that essentially that runtime fee was going to gobble up any money that the developer made, including that on initial 200,000, you know, based on some sizes. It was ridiculous how quickly that money would disappear in those fees. Fees decreased slightly for pro and enterprise customers after their 1 million in revenue and 1 million installs. The move led to almost immediately backlash from many developers. Unity's, whose then CEO, John Riccilio, had described in 2015 as having, quote, no royalties, no effing around, and was quite simply not a company to be trusted, wrote Necrosoft Games' Brandon Chetfield. Developers said they would hold off on updates or switch engines rather than absorb the fee, which would have retroactively countered installs before... That's what it was. It was the retroactive installs. That's what we did the math on. Are people really defending that? It wasn't reasonable because it was install-based. It wasn't even sale-based. It was install-based. It's like, I can understand asking for a per-license fee of, you know, a nickel per, you know, $10 game or, you know, percent or something like that. But it wasn't even that. It was per install. I mean, yeah. Unity's terms of service seemed to allow for such sudden shifts. Unity softened the impact of the fee on personal users, removed the backdated install counting, and capped fees at 2.5% of revenue. Unity Create president and general manager Mark Witten told Ars at the time that while the fee would seemingly not affect the vast majority of Unity users, he understood that a stable agreement should be a feature of the engine. You should know. If you're going to use a game engine, you should know that the companies are going to turn around and just, you know, legally mug you for everything you've got. However, coincidentally or not, Riccilio announced his retirement the next month, which led to some celebration among devs, but not a total restoration of trust. A massive wave of layoffs throughout the winter of 2023 and 2024 showed that Unity's financial position was precarious, partly due to the acquisitions during Riccilio's term. The runtime fee would have had minimal impact to 2024, the company said in filings, but would ramp up from there as customers adopt new releases. Instead of ramping up from there, the runtime fee is now gone, and Unity has made other changes to its pricing structure. Unity Personal remains free, and the revenue funding ceiling increases from $100,000 to $200,000. Unity Pro, for customers over the personal limit, sees an 8% increase in price to $2,200 per seat. Unity Enterprise with customized packages for those over 25 million in revenue or funding sees a 25% increase. Well, the pro pricing is basically keeping up with inflation. The enterprise one's a bit, you know, 25% increase is kind of high, but I mean, it's still not outlandish. Quote, from this point going forward, it's our intention to revert to a more traditional cycle of considering any potential price increases on an annual basis. Bromberg wrote in his post, changes to Unity's editor software would allow customers to keep using their existing version under previously agreed terms, he wrote. So, that's, you know, Unity has finally given in to common sense and realized that they were murdering their business with that thing. Yeah, they waited the customary year and then backed out of the dumb policies just to try to save face. So, anyways, let's do this. This last one's from TechSpot. It's been in a few different places. I think I saw it on Hackaday as well. It's hilarious. Somebody took an ESP32 and jammed it inside of a TI-84, hooked it up to the link port so that you didn't even need anything installed on the TI-84. You could reload over the link port. And then it used the Wi-Fi in the ESP32 to connect to a computer to basically act as the host. They were piping web pages to it, cheat sheets, ChatGPT. and the modified TI-84 had no visible signs of being hacked, so you could even hand it to the teacher and let them wipe the thing clean and then just reload the link software, you know, just by setting it to receive a file, basically, over the link. And, yeah, you know, get right back to it. So it's literally, and the gag of it to me is that it's a handheld computer running a Z80. Basically, and then they stick an ESP32 in it, so you've actually got two computers inside, well, microcontrollers inside the case for the graphing calculator, and they're just wired up, so one of them's emulating the link port protocol, and well, do whatever you want over it. So it's an awesome thing. It's got a cool video. Definitely worth looking at, especially for anybody who grew up using these things in school. I still have a TI-86 on my desk right here because according to the American education system, that's how you do math. God forbid you use a proper computer, freaking cell phone, tablet, any number of apps, or nope. Z80 and a way overpriced handheld black and white calculator that runs Microsoft Basic. Well, it's TI Basic, but you know what I mean. That's all I got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the BBS, and I have considered moving the BBS to genuine Commodore hardware. I don't know. I will think about it. That's all I got. I have no closing thoughts. I have no one to give me closing thoughts tonight. So, sound effects.
Thank you for your continuing patience during this transitional zombie apocalypse. Your satisfaction is very important to us.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Security, she's got a break.
Get over it, whore.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day.